like that bump. Welcome to the show, everybody. Cairo Nights. My name is Aaron Mason. I'm filling in for G. Scott tonight while he is out of town. Live from the Carter Subaru Studios. You can text us, the Online Trading Academy text line. It's 98973. Share your opinions, your loves, your hates. I like the hates. I don't mind. Frank Shires.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was fun.
For being here, for doing the news. We're going to talk about a few of those stories you just talked
Are
about.
Are we?
Later on the show this evening.
Look forward to it.
Very excited. A consummate professional as always, Frank Shires.
Thank you, sir.
It's a good man. So, yeah, let's just jump right into it. Why don't we? First story tonight is about transit. Shock. Shock, shock, shock. This has been an issue in this city for quite some time. We are mid debacle, could you say? We have the tunnel situation going on. Of course, I'm talking about the 99 tunnel, the bored tunnel that replaces the viaduct. The traffic downtown is a nightmare. That's for cars and for transit in general. And there is a concern that the light rail is also being held up by some of this traffic, specifically the Metro bus traffic in the tunnel underneath Seattle. If you're not a bus taker, maybe you don't know this, but I ride the bus. I don't own a car. David Burbank, you're a bus man.
I love the bus. I do own a car, but it's barely a car, so I do very much like the bus.
So you have the option, and you still choose transit.
Yes, absolutely.
I like that.
Oh, yeah. No parking that I have to deal with.
That's right.
Don't have to worry about my car breaking down, because it will, because it's a 1990 Honda Accord, and it is not good. But the bus never breaks down.
The bus, yeah, well, very rarely breaks down.
I suppose, yeah.
It occasionally gets stuck in the ice for 4 hours right outside of the Cairo Radio Studios, like it did last week. It was kind of exciting. But it's also great people watching. I do love that part of the bus,
yes,
too.
Yes, absolutely.
You get some colorful characters around this city. But so what they're planning to do, this is according to the Seattle Times here. They're going to take this tunnel that's under the city that currently is shared by both the train, the light rail, and buses. And it's there for the buses because it can sort of bypass all of the mania that is Seattle traffic at certain times of the day. And it turns out that on March 23rd, SDOT is going to move all of the bus routes that have been going through the tunnel up to the surface streets of downtown Seattle. Because you know what we need? We need more vehicles in downtown Seattle. I don't know if that's just an odd opinion that I share with maybe no one. Apparently, SDOT agrees with me. But yeah, that's the plan. The tunnel will be closed to bus traffic starting March 23rd and will be used exclusively for the light rail. Now, here's one of the problems with this, if I can be honest with you. We don't have room. We don't have space. Currently, there isn't enough space. And we've already, this tunnel, which I am not a fan of, I have not been a fan of since before day one. We were told that would be, you know, it's going to be a little inconvenient for a while, right? It's part of growing pains. The city of Seattle is very clearly not designed for the population that now exists in Seattle. We are decades and decades behind keeping up with the demand, with the need. Now, yes, there are certain geographical limitations. This is a beautiful city with water everywhere, and there's no way to get a car over water unless you take a ferry or build a very expensive bridge, and sometimes that's just not a feasible option. But what they're saying is that this tunnel situation is going to be, it's going to help keep the trains on time. Now, I am also an enormous fan of the light rail. I haven't had to pick up anybody from the airport since the light rail got installed.
Oh, yeah, especially from the airport. That is, like, the best use of the light rail that I can really think of at this point. It's fantastic.
It's the best use everywhere. And I know Todd Herman, who was just on the show before us, he's not a fan of what he calls the choo-choo train. And that's okay, Todd. Not everybody has to be. I get it. But is this really going to make that much of a difference? Are they really saying that they can put the amount of people that would normally be on buses into these trains? I don't know that that's possible. The buses right now that use the tunnel are responsible for 830 trips a day. Okay, that's a lot. And the trains are supposed to come every 6 minutes. Now, sometimes there are buses down there and buses getting on and off the buses. That can be a big ordeal. That can put you off schedule a little bit. Of course, you're going to have traffic issues that put you off schedule. So maybe the trains can't keep to a prompt schedule like they should. And again, big fan of trains all over the world in developed country. They have high-speed rail. They have subway systems that are to the minute, right? Tokyo is very, very famous for this. So what are they going to do to speed up the buses? Well, outside, we know what they want to do to speed up the trains. They want to take the buses and they want to put them on the surface. But then how do you expedite this sudden surge in buses that are going to be on the surface streets? Well, all door boarding is an option. That's a thing that they do use now in certain places where you scan your ORCA card at a podium that's on the sidewalk, that's at the bus stop. And then when the bus shows up, you can just go in any of the doors. You don't have to go in the front and pass through the driver. You've already paid your fare. You get on the bus and you're good to go. And that helps expedite the process. If you're paying in cash, you still have to get into the front of the bus to do that transaction with the driver. But Metro decides that they're gonna do this. They're going to put a bunch of pretty much all the routes on 3rd Avenue between Jackson and Denny. That's Westlake through South Lake Union, all these places. They're going to get all-door boarding. And so one of the things that you need to do or that you know, Metro decides that they need to do is have more fare enforcement officers to try and keep an eye and making sure that people are actually paying their fare. Now, I've seen the Metro. I've seen the fare enforcement officers. Good luck getting around on a crowded bus. And buses are hecka crowded. Can I say hecka on the radio? I'm not sure. Buses are very crowded. It's hard to navigate. And then when you do run into people that haven't paid their fare, lots of times, I see it all the time, it's homeless people. It's people that can't afford a ride that need to get somewhere. And in that case, and I think this is fine, the decision to let somebody on or off the bus, on the bus, is made by the driver. It's an individual person making an individual decision. The bus driver knows more about this than I do, so I trust the driver to make a good decision here. But I don't know. This just feels like a mess. Does this feel like more of a mess to you out there? Like,
yes,
right,
absolutely. Yeah, it feels like, and what they're gonna have to do is take a bunch of these buses that are currently on the routes up on the surface streets, and they're pushing them up several streets, and so that's gonna change up all the routes that people depend on. You know, people depend on a certain bus route depending on their day and depending on their commute to work, and so it's really just sort of messing everything up. And I don't understand really. I don't know. I've never gotten down to the light rail station of any light rail station and been like, this light rail is taking too long. I bet there's not going to be a light rail that comes, right, or something. It's like, right, I know there's going to be one. Maybe it's like 3 minutes late. That is not the hugest deal in the world to me. And the fact that the buses that right now up until the 23rd of March are getting to use the tunnel underneath downtown, that feels like that is taking them out of the traffic. And it's overall, like, it's there's too many things going on. You can't have all of the buses up there. You either have to cut some of the routes, or you have to allow buses to go in the tunnel, or you have to find another way around it. And there's not another way around it. And it seems like a very weird, quote-unquote, solution to a problem that's not necessarily a big problem.
David, I completely agree with you. I think that makes me think of two things, actually. One is that the buses, like, if you've ever been downtown, buses are a problem when there's a lot of traffic, because buses can't, like, make their turns. They can't make a left turn. They end up blocking whole intersections for light cycles at a time. Like, it's just a big mess down there. So you'd think letting them travel underground and bypass the city, bypass downtown, would be a good idea. The tunnel has taken away any sort of alternate route into downtown. Now the tunnel completely bypasses downtown. So that's taken away that pressure valve, too. So it's just all clustering in. And I can't see how this isn't going to be a giant mess.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. The 99 tunnel is that's taking away, you know, drivers who might have gotten off of the viaduct to get into downtown. And it's forcing them to then go all the way through downtown before they're able to exit. And so people are going to, you know, avoid maybe the tunnel and go instead onto the streets, which is just going to cause more and more congestion.
More and more and more congestion. Oh, transit. Transit gets me fired up. And I love it. I'm a big fan of mass transit.
Oh, absolutely.
Huge.
Nothing better than people being able to go where they need to go, and in a mass of people, you know, a massive amount of people being able to get where they need to go. That's just fantastic at a low cost. That's awesome.
It's good for everybody. It's good for everybody. Okay. I'm going to move on a little bit here. The one of the stories that is literally everywhere. I'm looking at CNN and Fox News up on the TVs here in the studio, and they are both talking about this story. And it, of course, is Jussie Smollett, the actor from the show Empire, who has just been released on $10,000 bond because he basically faked a hate crime. He said his attackers, that he was attacked because he's an out gay black man. And boy. Did this turn very, very sour? I can get more into if you're not caught up. I mean, his story is he went out late night in Chicago, the city center, to buy some food. And then these two white men started hurling racial and homophobic. There we are. Insults at him. Said they punched him, poured a chemical substance over him, and put a rope around his neck, a noose. Smollett also claimed the men told him, "This is MAGA country." Outpouring of support followed after that. Lots of famous folk being sympathetic to his case. And then it turns out the Chicago Police Department did an investigation, and it seems that Smollett hired two men who previously worked on the TV show Empire that he was on to impersonate Trump supporters and attack him and scream racist and homophobic slurs at him. So today, the superintendent of the police department in Chicago, his name's Eddie Johnson, he spoke to the media about this story.
The accusations within this phony attack received national attention for weeks. Celebrities, news commentators, and even presidential candidates weighed in on something that was choreographed by an actor.
He also outlined Smollett's plan for this fraud.
First, Smollett attempted to gain attention by sending a false letter that relied on racial, homophobic, and political language. When that didn't work, Smollett paid $3,500 to stage this attack and drag Chicago's reputation through the mud in the process.
Yeah, there was a letter. He mailed himself a letter to Fox Studios that produces the show, and there was white powder in the letter. It turns out it was aspirin. But why would a guy do this? And Superintendent Johnson has an idea.
This stunt was orchestrated by Smollett because he was dissatisfied with his salary. So he concocted a story about being attacked.
Says the stunt was a distraction to the police department, and I fully agree with this. This is why falsifying crimes by lying to the police. This is why this is a problem, because it takes them away from what they should be focusing their attention on, and that's real crimes.
And for somebody to use it for personal gain, it's shameful, because what that does is take away the resources that we could be putting into other crimes.
This is just madness to me. He was released after his court appearance today with, on, like I said, $10,000 bond. That's 10% of his $100,000 bail, and he's got to surrender his passport to authorities, so he's not allowed to go anywhere. So here's the opinion part of this story. I'm gonna share my opinion, and some of you may not agree with me, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. We all think different things all the time, but I think this is good news for Donald Trump. I think there's a lot of talk from his side of things, and I don't just mean Republicans or anything, but the way this guy does stuff is pretty nefarious. And there's a whole group of people who think that operating this way is a good way to do things. And a lot of those people do things like this. They set up these fake things, and here's an example of someone who should, in my opinion, not be doing this. Who is doing this? And this is just going to give ammo to folks on the Trump side of stuff to say, like, look, now this is something they can point to and be like, this guy. Now, he's just one guy. He's one guy doing a very, very dumb thing. But I think this is bad news.
And it was just so poorly done. Like, it's just awful execution. This seems like someone with, like, you're drunk at a bar and you're talking about how you're going to really get back at the MAGA people or whatever you're saying if you're Jesse Smollett. And then you formulate this plan while inebriated, but then he went through with the plan and did a terrible job at it. Like, why are you mailing a letter to yourself at the studio with white powder in it? Just overkill, dude. That's way overkill. No one's going to believe that, right?
No, and why are you hiring two guys that were extras on your show, one of whom is your personal trainer? Like, this is, it's just madness.
He's leaving his fingerprints on everything.
Sloppy. Sloppy, Smollett. Not a fan. I think it's bad news. But he wanted to get paid more. He wanted to raise his profile.
Don't we all?
That's why some people run for president. My name is Aaron Mason. I'm filling in for G. Scott tonight. Cairo Nights, Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Stay tuned. We'll be with you all night. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Aaron Mason, filling in for G. Scott. Hey, look who it is here. Joining us now, it's my friend and yours, host of the Your Last Meal podcast. Available wherever you get podcasts. It's Rachel Bell.
It's the woman who emails herself. So to do this segment, I was going to email Aaron the story that we're about to talk about, and then he wasn't responding. And then I looked and I realized that I had just quite literally emailed the story to me. If that's not an egomaniacal monster, I don't know what is.
I think you're being hard on yourself, Rach. It's okay.
I'll talk to me about it and see how I feel later. Anyway, so I found this story that was written by a woman named Kay Tilden Frost, and the article is entitled Gordon Ramsay Changed Everything About How My Kids Eat. So this woman is autistic. Both of her daughters are also autistic. Okay. And she explained in the article that a lot of autistic people have a hard time with food because of texture and spice and acidity because they're highly sensitive. So there's something called sensory processing disorder, SPD, and it means that their brain does not interpret sensory information the same way as it does other people. So, for example, if you put a squeeze of lime on a taco, that might be good for us. For some autistic people, that ends up being like fiery burn of acid.
Okay.
So her kids are very, what we might say, picky. And she was making three separate meals for years. And as an autistic person herself, she understood this and it wasn't really bothering her. But there was something else I'd never heard of before. Apparently, a lot of autistic people don't get enough protein in their diet for various reasons. And one of them is that a lot of them don't like the texture and taste of meat.
Right. And it varies a lot, too, depending on how you cook it. Even just a steak, let's say.
Yeah.
You're going to get a whole gamut of different textures.
Exactly.
And I'm no expert, but I would assume that that autistic people also generally do not care for surprises. You know, that might be something that's a little overwhelming signal-wise.
Yeah. And I want to point out, if you're listening and you are autistic or there's people in your lives, we are not generalizing. We know that this isn't for all people who are autistic. But talking just about this woman, her family, and what she described as things that are common. I don't know what I'm talking about. I just read articles and explain them to you on the radio. So what happened was one day she came home from work and she was really stressed out. And her boyfriend said, hey, why don't we watch Hell's Kitchen, that Gordon Ramsay show?
I love
And she said, how could that possibly relax me? That man screams and yells at contestants. That is Gordon Ramsay's shtick, is that during these cooking competitions, he's just red-faced and yelling at everybody. But she started to watch, and she really enjoyed it. And then her kids started to watch, and they got so hooked that they wouldn't allow her to watch without them being in the room. And then this turned into her children wanting to eat all kinds of foods that they never wanted to eat before. They loved the show so much that, first of all, they just had a curiosity about trying things that they were eating on the show. For example, something as simple as scrambled eggs, which she said her daughters refused to eat. Mm. After watching a YouTube video of Gordon Ramsay making scrambled eggs, her daughter requested it for dinner and ate it. And then the other thing that helped with was Gordon Ramsay does a lot of criticism, but he explains what's wrong with a dish. So he will tell you, you know, why this dish isn't good. And so her kids, for the first time, started to be able to verbalize what they liked and didn't like about foods.
Wow.
So, for example, because of the show, they made sliders, and she cooked them medium rare because she and Gordon Ramsay agreed that that's the best way to cook a burger.
Of course.
And one daughter loved it, the other didn't. But she said it was only about a minute before that daughter, for the first time, was able to say, I don't like the pink part. I like the brown part of the meat. So she cooked the burger longer, and then everyone was able to eat the same meal for the first time.
That's fascinating.
I know. I thought so, too. I also thought it was interesting because if, you know, maybe she thought her kids were having more of a sensory difficulties than they were because, you know, it's if they weren't able to eat scrambled eggs before, why can they eat them now because of Gordon Ramsay?
Right.
Maybe there were other things involved, but I thought it was cool.
I think that's true for a lot of people, even people without autism. I know tons of people in my life who are like, oh, I don't like this. I don't like this thing. And I've often gone, well, let me prepare it for you a different way. And then they eat it and they're like, oh, my gosh, this is a totally different thing. I like this a lot. So being able to verbalize, like you said, which is a big problem for a lot of people with autism. Gosh, this makes me feel really good.
I know.
I love this story.
I know.
And then it's Gordon Ramsay, a guy who calls people like donkey and donut when he's screaming at them. And like you said, to be able to sort of put your finger on what exactly it is I don't like about something, seeing an example of that is just super helpful. That's, I think, in all areas.
Yeah, I was going to say, take note, Yelpers. I mean, it's very fun to read Yelp reviews and just get kind of frustrated and hate read these reviews and go like, what are you talking about? Because when you're telling somebody to go to a restaurant or to not go, it doesn't help to say it was good, I didn't like it, I liked it. It's like, use your adjectives. Like in sixth grade, my language arts teacher taught us show, not tell. And to this day, when I'm writing articles for publications, I think show, not tell. And it's the same thing. Like, why didn't you like that steak? Was it cooked incorrectly? Was it under season, over season? Like, these kind of specifics and details are very helpful.
And the fact that he is tasting everything, and he as a chef demands that the people who are making the food taste everything while they're making it, it sort of shows that change or experimentation isn't a bad thing. It's a good thing, and it might make someone who's not an adventurous eater for whatever reason might sort of familiarize them with the idea of experimenting and just giving it a try. And if we need to change it, change is okay.
I like what you said, though, about preparing things in new ways, because I think that's true. A lot of people had, let's say, Brussels sprouts as a kid, and so they don't like them even now. But if you have a roasted Brussels sprout that's been caramelized and gets sweet and has brown on it, like my mom made boiled Brussels sprouts.
So did mine.
Like, what are you doing, lady? But I was a weird kid and I actually liked them. But I see why most people don't. But most things just need to be cooked in a different way. And I've interviewed a picky expert, a woman who wrote a book about it. And that's her number one recommendation is just try the same food prepared in a different way or put a sauce on it or, you know, no shame, melt some cheese on it. You might like it. And then you'll graduate into liking it without the cheese eventually.
Melted cheese will cover a multitude of sins.
It's true. I don't think the crisis in the Middle East would be happening if they melted cheese over the entire region.
That's all. Guys, we're solving world peace.
We need to get the largest slice of cheese in the world. And they'll make the Guinness book so it's a double-double.
Ooh, a double-double.
Ooh.
Yum.
One of the most common things for people not to like is tomatoes, is what this woman I interviewed told me, the picky expert. And one of the hypotheses is very interesting. They are in the nightshade family. So the idea is that maybe little kids are just naturally backing away from tomatoes because they think that they will endanger them or kill them, you know, just on a animalistic level.
Yeah.
And I'm someone who's not picky and I'll eat most things. And I only started to be able to eat tomatoes a couple years ago. I never liked them either.
Really?
Yeah. But I had to kind of really push myself into it. And most of that for me was just having a tomato from someone's garden after an entire life of eating those pale, kind of mealy, light pink tomatoes that you get on a burger at a restaurant, which are just awful. So I only eat tomatoes in the summer. And I mostly only eat the little orange or yellow grape tomatoes that are just little balls of candy.
Yes.
This has completely turned me. I love tomatoes now.
Yeah, I grew up loving tomatoes. I'll eat them like apples.
Because you're from Jersey. You're from the land of the tomato.
We got good tomats.
And you like to tell people about it, too.
We all do. Rachel Bell, thanks for joining us
again. Thanks, Aaron Mason.
And
for those who don't know, Aaron produces the podcast that I host, Your Last Meal. So give a listen. Our latest guest is Phil Rosenthal. And we have a great guest coming up next week. If you watch Salt, oh gosh, can I say it in order? Fat, Salt, Acid, Heat.
That sounds good.
Samin Nosrat, the host of that and the author of the book. She's our next guest. So find us at yourlastmealpodcast.com.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
You're listening to Cairo Nights, Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. We'll be back after these words. Here on Cairo Radio, you're listening to Cairo Nights. My name's Aaron Mason, filling in for G. Scott. And you know what happens at this time.
Popular. You're really unpopular.
Unpopular opinion. It's an excellent section of the show. If I do say so myself, we got Frank Shires joining us. Hey, David. Why don't you share this with us? Because this seems to be something that you feel very passionate about.
Yeah, I would love to, Aaron. So I think my unpopular opinion for today is I think the most essential aspect of any establishment, that being an office building, that being a restaurant, that being a theater, anywhere in public, I think the most essential aspect is a clean restroom and preferably a private restroom.
Okay, so let me clarify something to make sure I have this straight in my mind. Let's say I'm in, I don't know, Copenhagen, Denmark, and I got a reservation to Noma.
Is that a good restaurant?
It's four times the best in the world, Frank.
Oh, okay.
Real classy.
Been there?
Going to cost you several hundred dollars.
Is it?
You got to try and you got to get on a list 6 months ahead of time. So you get served a multi-course, most amazing meal of your life. You go into the restroom, David, and it's either not private or a little sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And that will, you're taking pegs down.
I am.
You're deducting points.
Oh, big time.
Your Yelp review is no
big
longer
time.
Five stars.
Yeah, I think, well, next time I might order to go out of there or something like
out
that.
Out of Noma?
But, so what are we talking about here? If five stars is the best,
yes.
What does a janky restroom bring it down to?
A janky restroom, I think, would bring it down to 3.5 stars.
Wow.
I'm gonna say. Yeah. So,
right?
Yeah, that's...
So, but it does depend on the degree of the restroom. So, in a place like, well, I guess, so the lowest bar for restrooms, in my opinion, is the Green Lake public restrooms. They are the absolute worst restrooms I have ever stepped foot in ever. And that's not just they're dirty. Like, they're not that dirty. They're just like any other public restroom. But there's no doors anywhere. And I'm sure this is to try to alleviate some sort of drug use, I imagine. But it's there's no doors like at all. Like, you can – a child can see you using the urinal, which is – ridiculous to me. That seems like a real shady, like, unsafe thing. And moving all the way up, I think, and these bathrooms, the ones I'm about to talk about, are not even that gorgeous or beautiful, but the bathrooms in Optimism Brewing in Capitol Hill are, there is just a row of stalls. There's a communal sort of hand washing area, and then there's a row of stalls, no gendered to it at all. Yep. And there's probably 20 stalls that they just fit into this area, and each stall is fairly small. It's a little bigger than a honey bucket, probably. But the important aspect here for me is the barriers go up all the way, so you don't see anyone's feet. You don't hear anyone. They're just big walls in between each of the restrooms, and that to me is the most essential part.
Are you real into privacy in the restroom, Frank? Is that important to you? Do you not want to stand next to a gentleman?
I don't.
When you're doing your business,
I have. I'm like Dory. I have a shy bladder.
Oh yeah, so, okay, sure. That's
so,
a thing.
You know, yeah, it certainly is. And let me just address David's unpopular opinion, which I don't agree with, because while I think a clean bathroom is important and of great value, I'm going to separate that bathroom from whatever experience it is. And the best examples I can give would be an average movie theater in Puget Sound. Very rarely are they as clean as I would like them to be, particularly around the place where people go.
Honestly,
finish.
Please,
but that having been said, I'm still going to go in and watch a Marvel movie, and I'm not going to take off points because the bathroom wasn't clean.
Right.
Because the experience for me is more important. And I'm afraid same thing's true of a restaurant, David. So I can't agree with you.
That is fair. I will say, I think by me saying a clean bathroom, I think that's I was misassociating what I actually believe, which is I want a bathroom that is private and also there are lots of areas to go.
How about you, Aaron?
I don't care at all. Yeah, it factors very little into how I feel about a place. I don't mind. Aaron, I don't mind the stadium trough. Like, I don't
really
care.
If you're at Safeco Field, you don't mind it at all.
I don't care.
He has
oh
no
man, that's my
whatsoever.
Nightmare. My nightmare is there's no stalls at Safeco, and there's just a line of men lined up at
no,
the
your nightmare is that all those things are true and you have to drop trow at the same time. That's your nightmare.
That is a nightmare.
That is definitely a nightmare. While we're plugging restrooms that we enjoy, can I just say, well, David did, he shouted out the brewery earlier. There's a local business here on East Lake. It's called Pazzo's. It's right up the street.
Yeah.
And they have the greatest urinal of all time. Gentlemen, patronize Pazzo's.
Start your engines.
And check out these urinals. They're floor, but they kind of have a bowl aspect to them. They come up high. It's nice and deep. There's no splashback. It's got a very satisfying ba-whoosh when you flush it. You have to consider these sonic qualities as well, Frank.
That's right.
It's very important. Oh, I love it. Thank you. Thank you, Frank Shires. He will be back at the top of the hour with the news. Thank you, David Burbank, for your unpopular opinion. And we will see you the 8 o'clock hour right here on Cairo Nights.